The Around the League podcast still believes in Case Keenum.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the League podcast. I'm Greg Rosenthal. Dan Hansis not in the building today, but we still have a couple of heroes, Mark Sessler and Chris Wesseling.
How's it feel for you?
What up, boys?
You did a pretty good job there.
Greg, you forgot the what up, boys. Even I know that part.
I'm not a big fan of the what up, boys, but I tried to honor Dan's memory because it's tough to go on without him. He's our favorite host of this entire show.
We'll try to get by, and we wish him well. We're not quite certain what the deal is, but he will be back.
He'll be back on Friday.
Absolutely.
He's missing a big show. K-Rich is excited back there.
I am excited, guys. I'm ready for this first discussion.
We're gonna talk a little Seahawks and whether they're the NFC favorites. We're going to go over the news with K-Rich. We're going to do a new game and bring in a new guest. Who do you trust? That's our game coming up a little bit. We might get a few Thursday night football thoughts, but we promise not too many. Mark, I'm amazed how you can come into work. I know that you only had like 1 hour of sleep last night,
right?
And you're fine.
Listen, I just battle through.
Like we had a going away party for a guy at work, and then after Mark got home from that, his kids didn't let him sleep, and it's like it doesn't matter.
You just get used to these things. You got to come in and battle. And then when Wes shows up, I feel a new spirit and energy to the room.
Glad I could contribute.
There you go.
You were also feeling quite an energy on Monday Night Football when the Seattle Seahawks were laying the bang thing down mm-hmm. on the New Orleans Saints, and we got to halftime or so. We still had 30 minutes more of football to go, and Mark and Dan and pretty much the rest of the NFL Twitter community at that point just awarded the National Football Conference to the Seattle Seahawks, and I quote, this is Mark Sessler's Twitter post, Seattle versus blank in the Super Bowl.
Well, Dan went even a step further and said just hand the title to the Seahawks because no AFC team can beat the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, here's Dan's. Prepare for the first Super Bowl blowout in a while, world. It is coming. And I just have to be the voice of reason here. Why are the Seahawks a lock to the Super Bowl? Just because they won a game in December, why are we saying they're going to win the Super Bowl or even make it?
All right, well, in terms of them getting to the Super Bowl, which Dan obviously believes will happen too, let me try to defend him a bit and explain why
I wrote that. If the assumption is that they don't lose home field, which like major earth events would have to unfold for Seattle not to be the home field team from here on out, right?
Okay, I agree with that point.
I don't see a team. I'm not saying, listen, anything's possible, but I don't see a team that can go into that stadium and knock them out.
How about the Panthers?
I like the Panthers' chances a whole lot better than what I saw New Orleans do.
How about the 49ers? Pretty good team.
I guess I just went with my gut, and I tweeted that out because I just feel that Seattle is surging. They got healthy. They got their line back. They don't even need Percy Harvin to rain points on teams. Russell Wilson is playing flawless football, and they have my vote.
I feel like we have 2 years worth of evidence now that they are the best home team, and they're really an outlier as far as NFL teams are playing at home. That crowd is crazy. Russell Wilson has never lost there. Their defense plays at a pitch level. And, okay, you can bring up the Dolphins and the Titans or the Bucks and the Titans. The Seahawks, obviously,
they almost beat them.
Did not take those teams seriously. Anytime a big team comes in there, they get beat down. And I think your antenna should go up anytime Twitter turns into a chorus of NFL people singing in unison that
exactly.
Something has to happen.
Because it never happens.
It's not smart. It's not smart to all agree on everything.
How many times do we have to see this happen? The Patriots beat the Jets 45-3 in the same week, week 13 of 2010, and the Jets go back into New England and win the playoffs. The Cardinals were embarrassed on Thursday Night Football by the Philadelphia Eagles. A few weeks later, NFC Championship, Cardinals take care of them. Last year, the Baltimore Ravens were embarrassed in Baltimore by Denver. In the playoffs, they go back to beat Denver. We see this every year that you just can't start making assumptions in the beginning of December.
No, you're in on that front, I don't take that away from you because you're right. History tells us that a lot of times what we expect to happen in the playoffs, the opposite does. But, like, for instance, Jets-Patriots, two division teams that know each other so well back then, okay?
But no one thought that back then. They thought it was a joke.
I just don't see a Niners team right now. I think the Niners may be the second. I don't know. They're right there with Carolina. They're going to be dangerous in the playoffs. I wouldn't want to deal with them. But I just look at Seattle, complete team on all fronts.
I think we're going to have a different conversation a week from now after the 49ers get a home win over the Seahawks, and then we're thinking, and maybe the Panthers beat the Saints or something. You know, a lot of crazy things can happen. And these are defensive teams. You have to admit that the 49ers and the Panthers are defensive teams that can keep it close. And then anything happens. They're running teams. They're kind of similar. It's interesting that those three teams, not the Saints, but those three teams, or probably we think three of the best teams, are very similar in the NFC.
What Carroll said.
Thank you, Crystal.
Pete Carroll said earlier in the year when he was talking about the Panthers that they kind of reminded him of his own team.
So if you had, first of all, I guess I know this answer for Mark. How about Chris? If you could take the field or Seattle in the NFC, what are you taking?
I'm taking Seattle, but I don't think it's ridiculous to say that a team could go up there and beat them. I just think the odds are in their favor.
I'm taking the field. Just, I guess, to be a contrarian. I think history shows us that can happen. And then rate this statement from Dan. I feel bad for picking on him, but not that bad since he's not here. Prepare for the first Super Bowl blowout in a wild world. It is coming.
I don't understand how people are writing off the Broncos and, to a certain extent, the Patriots, who are playing on offense the last 5 weeks as well as anyone. The Broncos are a great team, not just a good team. They're a great team. And I don't understand why it's a given that the Seahawks would beat them by a lot.
You know what team we haven't even mentioned, Crystal, in this NFC discussion? One of the only three teams in the league to have a winning streak over two games.
I'm waiting for it.
The Philadelphia Eagles. Maybe they could do something. Ooh.
Not even Seduction Friday yet.
So if we had to take, to wrap this NFC talk up, if we had to take another team, if you were forced to pick another team other than Seattle that could go into Seattle. I agree they'll have home field. What team do you think it would be that could do it?
Let me say first that if the field wins, Greg, you win this, essentially this bet, I will cook you a pot of baked beans.
is that good?
Sure. That would be a gift for me.
Baked beans. I don't really like. That's I don't like mind baked beans.
It's not about you choosing what I would make for you. It's what I've just scanned mentally my closet at home, and I know there's a thing of baked beans that have been there since like 2009.
Yeah.
So that's coming your way.
Crystal's excited about this because she always wants cooking segments.
I want cooking segments, and you guys know exactly what I'm waiting for.
Will Chris Wessling eat his softball pants?
That's true because, well, this bet will be, or this disagreement will be settled well after we know the fate of the softball pants. But yeah, the baked beans could be a nice side dish with softball
pants. My second team would be the Panthers.
All right.
I'm taking the 49ers, and I feel pretty comfortable that they are the second strongest team right now. I trust their coaching staff. Even though I think Riverboat Ron deserves Coach of the Year, I trust Harbaugh and Greg Roman, and now with Crabtree back, the fact that they can't concentrate on stopping Vernon Davis and Anquan Boldin is huge, in my opinion. It's not a small thing. We saw throughout most of the first half that their receivers couldn't separate from coverage, from man coverage, and now you have Crabtree taking some defensive attention away. That opens up their entire offense. I really like what the 49ers have going on right now.
And they've played better on offense the last 2 weeks. I mean, this week is going to be such a great test. It's a great slate of games this week. I guess I would take the Panthers if I had to choose. But the reason why I feel good about going against you guys on this one is that I think there are so many good teams in the NFC. So
it's a totally different story than the other conference. NFC has some interesting stuff going on, so we'll see.
All right, Crystal, I think you know what time it is.
K-Rich on the headlines.
What up, boys? That's my best Dan Candace impression since he's not here today.
That's good.
All right, starting off, number one, Pittsburgh Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin is fined $100,000 for his little sideline stunt, and it could affect his draft pick for next year.
Assuming he's the head coach still next year.
He's going to be the head coach.
Which
I know Wes cannot get enough of this narrative.
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's hear it from you, Wes.
Well, it's preposterous that they would lose a draft pick over this. I think the fine is fair. Whatever. Tomlin doesn't care. I thought he handled the press conference yesterday as well as anyone could possibly handle.
Well, he cares. He just lost $100,000.
What is that in our world, like $14?
I love how people say
he
that.
Didn't care.
Oh, that's only $100,000. Give me a break. It's $100,000.
Well, no, I was asking I wasn't making a statement. I was actually asking for someone to calculate. You throw my salary compared to Tomlin's, it's about $14.75.
He doesn't care.
Well, let's do the math. He makes what? $3-5 million a year, maybe. $100,000 is still, what is that? Let's do the math.
It's like if a window broke at his house, he might have to wait one more paycheck to get it fixed.
That's like 2% of your salary. That's a fairly significant amount. If someone took away 2% of your salary, I don't think Simone and the kids would be too happy. They wouldn't be eating.
If I did something on par with what Tomlin did, then I would fork over the money and say, lesson learned, my fault.
He did do a good job in that presser. I thought that, listen, he answered something like 23 questions, and he spoke for over 20 minutes.
And he's not normally one to answer questions.
No.
He picks and chooses what he wants to answer usually.
Well, I think there's no more powerful owner in the league in terms of their connection with the league office than Art Rooney and the entire Rooney family. And I think that's that's a situation where they talk to Tomlin and tell him, hey, look, this is what we're looking for out of you, and he's being a good employee.
I think Breer made a good point, was that potentially it was what conditional draft picks that could get whacked or won, if any?
Yeah, so the story or the announcement from the league is that the Steelers could potentially lose a draft pick or be punished in some way, but they're going to wait for the draft order to be announced for that to happen. There's a few things that could happen here. Maybe it'll be a late-round pick. Maybe it'll be a compensatory pick or be part of that equation. Or maybe they're just kind of hanging this over Tomlin and the Steelers and making sure nothing goofy happens the rest of the way and reserving the right to punish them.
They've already given their third-round pick to Cleveland.
Crystal, what else we got?
All right, next up, Matt Flynn takes his starter snaps at the Packers practice, and Aaron Rodgers is still not clear. Sad for my fantasy team.
Sad for my preseason Super Bowl pick, which was the Green Bay Packers. I was feeling good about it, too, until he got hurt. It is sad, isn't it? They have the Falcons this week.
It's sad because we have to watch Matt Flynn again.
That's where I'm at.
Rodgers was not cleared, and he had a meeting with doctors on Tuesday. And he told reporters, you know, we won't know the answer until the end of the week. But Mike McCarthy, their coach, said something interesting that Rodgers isn't going to have any more tests this week. So if he's not having any more tests and he hasn't been cleared, they've told us for sure Matt Flynn is the starter this week against the Falcons.
Well, and Rodgers said he didn't want this to come into some game time decision that would mess with Flynn's preparation. I'm not quite sure that anything could cause Matt Flynn to be less effective than he was last game. Mm-hmm. But this whole thing about if they would potentially shut him down, if they lose this game, I don't think that's a terrible idea. Am I wrong there?
There are 16 games on the schedule. Play your 16 games. I hate this. It's the Bill Pullian thing with the Colts.
Yeah.
Pack it in early. These games don't count. Play for next year.
Well, unless
there's
he's
16
not.
Games, play them.
But
play them all.
What if the thing is, if they're going to make a push, he's going to play not at 100%, but if you're out of the playoff picture, get your star player healthy.
They're not going to let him play until it's safe to play.
Exactly.
And if it's
this
safe
isn't
to play,
like a,
then he should play.
This isn't like a torn knee ligament where there's some shades of gray. I think if they clear, they're going to be very careful. So I think if they feel confident he can play without getting hurt, they'll put him out there. And we're kind of writing off the Packers right now, but
not if they win this Sunday.
We don't know that Rodgers is out for the season. It feels like maybe he won't be back, but if they can just get this win at home against a terrible team, then it keeps them alive for another week for Rodgers to possibly return.
If they can't, are they already a team that probably shouldn't be talking about the playoffs at this point?
I mean,
I understand that one player changes everything to some degree, but lose to the Falcons at home?
It can't be any more embarrassing than what happened on Thanksgiving. That was the worst I've seen any team play all year.
I wasn't a part of this podcast last week, but I listened to it. Let the record show,
Chris,
that Mark Sessler was absolutely right about Matt Flynn. Mm. This is a quarterback who had an 85-mile-an-hour fastball coming into the league. It's now about 80. after his elbow injuries. You could see that he doesn't have the arm to win in the NFL.
Something's not there.
Okay, Rich.
All right, guys. Last up, Bears GM Phil Emery doesn't sound too keen on using the franchise tag.
That doesn't bode well for Jay Cutler getting the franchise number next year, which will probably be $16 million or more. Does this surprise you guys at all?
It does, but in a way, he can say whatever he wants in December. He doesn't have to make any decisions yet. It will be a lot more telling if the deadline comes and he doesn't use the franchise tag. To me, that decreases any potential he would have, any bargaining power he would have to possibly trade Jay Cutler. And our NFL media columnist, Mike Silver, reported a month ago that it's quite possible that Mark Trestman isn't smitten with Jay Cutler as his long-term answer, that they still are not happy that his mechanics are a mess, that maybe Josh McCown can play every bit as well as Jay Cutler. So I think it's an interesting situation there.
It's ever a coach that would have an argument for drafting or bringing in a quarterback that doesn't have issues with his mechanics, a guy that can, you know, Trestman could take someone, build them from the ground up. And we've seen McCown was dead weight before Trestman showed up.
He wasn't even a good backup.
No, he was lifeless. And I look at also with Cutler, and I know that, you know, injuries are freak injuries at times, but this isn't a guy that consistently rattles off 16-game seasons either. Not in Chicago, at least. Is that an issue in terms of do we pay this guy sky-high money?
I think that has to be an issue.
It's a good point. Two different injuries this year. You know what this whole Trestman era has been bad for? Who it's been bad for? Luke McCown. Because before, we didn't even know which McCown brother was which.
Right,
they were
right.
Just both, like you said, these guys. And now it's like Luke is a joke and Josh is the man.
It's got to make family gatherings. If it wasn't already uncomfortable that you both essentially failed at your respective careers, now one has taken off and the other is just still Luke McCown, a potential future insurance salesman.
There's definitely
some.
Do you
think they go to family functions like everybody's in one car, one McCown car?
Yeah, I think Mr. McCown and Mr. McCown are in the front seat, and Luke and Josh are in the back, probably at, you know, arguing.
12 McClowns come out of their McCown car.
How dare you say they failed? Two guys.
You're right.
Growing up in the hills of Louisiana, just hoping for a chance, both make an NFL roster. By the way, I have no idea where they grew up.
Wait,
I think that's right.
Luke McCown is the reason we have Blaine Gabbert.
Now, this is a true story that your son, Colton, is at least partially inspired by Colt McCoy.
That is fair.
Why didn't you name your second son Brandon?
Now, Luke, your son Luke, he is not named after Luke McCown. Is that?
That is correct.
Okay. Just making sure. Was Luke McCown on the Browns at one point? I feel like he might
have. A McCown brother was, and I believe it was Luke.
All right. I think
dark times.
Weed and Sessler has a nice ring to it.
The day after we named Colton, the day he was born was the draft, and Brandon Ween was drafted that night. I no longer attach Colt McCoy to my son's name at this point.
I would not tell. I feel like that's information maybe you keep to yourself. I mean, in terms of telling
Well,
Colt.
Until you just told, you know, thousands of people on an NFL.com podcast.
He'll never hear that podcast. But the whole Whedon thing, it's kind of like you don't want your mom telling you that you were a mistake. You know what I'm saying?
I would not want to hear that from
my
mom.
I'm just saying, it's kind of like that. I don't know if you want to hear that you were named after a guy on the same day they drafted
Well,
Whedon
I will say my wife was
him.
Had major reservations about the concept of naming an offspring off of anyone on the Browns, and she, you know, we love the name and everything, but that heritage story is quickly going away.
Well, you know, my youngest brother's name is Akili. Akili Westling for Akili Smith.
Good heavens.
I can't tell if you're kidding. He's kidding.
I was going to say, that is by far worse.
All right, totally kidding.
This is what happens when Dan doesn't host the show. We just veer so far off the tracks with the 5-minute McCown conversation. I'm excited for this. Time for my new favorite segment. It's the first time we're doing this segment, and to start it off, we're going to bring in a new guest, the Around the League producer from the NFL Network, Michael Berger.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Hey, Michael.
I'm great.
Welcome.
It's a true honor and a privilege to be here.
Well, you came up with this idea for a segment, so we figured...
Well, I'm a producer. I hope I came up with something.
Right. So we figured have you on, and you know, and not a lot of people know this, but there's actually a television show named after our podcast, the Around the League podcast.
Is that right?
Such a big hit up here that you guys just decided we should put this on TV and try to capitalize on some of our name brand. How is that going for you?
It's going great. It's sort of a chicken or the egg, which came first. I think we, well, either way, it's a good franchise that we've all sort of created here, and it's going great. For those who don't know, by the way, the Around the League television version is on the air from 3 to 5 Pacific or 6 to 8 in the East.
Yes.
Every day. Well, not every day. Monday, it's on at 6 Eastern. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, it's on from 6 to 8 Eastern.
Look at this synergy. Our bosses are going to be excited.
Isn't everybody excited about this? And we're on a little earlier on Thursdays because of Thursday Night Football coverage. We're on the air at 2 Eastern on Thursdays with Andrew Siciliano and Lindsay Rhodes. Taking you all around the league, all 32 teams, you know, our reporters in the field, some analysis, breaking news. It's really, if you don't watch,
you should watch.
You should watch.
It really is kind of like the television version. On our site, we're trying to pound out lots of stories all day. They're getting these stories ready.
And we sit next to these guys all day long.
Talk about synergy. I mean, we are just, this is the brain trust of NFL Network right here.
Right. We sit next to Lindsay, the talented Lindsay Rhodes.
The TV zone. We call her TV zone, Lindsay Rhodes.
The ineffable Andrew Siciliano,
absolutely,
who just reads things. So we all sit together at work. So we're all in the mix.
So this was a long time. This is a long time.
It
coming.
Was a long time coming, and I was joking. Of course, the show has been around, I think, for 5 or 6.
It's been around for a while. Yeah,
we were clearly named after that property.
Right. The blog, the podcast, both named after that. But let's get into the game. It's who do you trust? I think it's self-explanatory.
Well, actually, can you explain it to me? I'm not really sure how.
Nick Foles, Matthew Stafford, we're in week 14. These two guys are going to face off this weekend. Which quarterback do you trust more?
Do I trust to do what? Succeed.
What else are you going to
take? Okay, well, no. I mean, I could... Well,
in a playoff game, how about that?
Mark was very concerned whether this is Matthew Stafford and Nick Foles in a vacuum or on their current teams. It's like, you're looking too deep into it. On their teams.
All right. I will go first. I go right now Foles. Guy's thrown. Wow. Our producer, not a closet Eagles fan, just overt with her Eagles love. Foles has not thrown an interception. He's thrown a pile of touchdowns. Stafford, I love what the Lions can do. They're explosive, but then they turn around. They lost to, the Bucks and the Steelers back-to-back. Very weird team.
But we're not talking just team. We're talking quarterback.
Foles has, I think people are cautious to look at what Foles has done and say, yeah, he's got it. But you know what? He's done it week after week. I'm going Foles.
I'm going Stafford. I remember what Foles did in the game. I forget which game it was, but he came in for Vic. He had a great game. And then he had the game, I think it was
Cowboys game,
where he literally couldn't complete a pass 5 yards down the field.
He was injured. That was one bad game.
Right. But we were talking in the newsroom yesterday, is this Nick Foles or is this a product of Chip Kelly's system? I mean, you have guys that are wide open down the field. You know, I would like to think any of us could complete some of these throws. And you just have to wonder, at some point, are the law of averages going to catch up to Nick Foles? As far as Stafford is concerned, yeah, he's had turnover issues the last few weeks. And yes, you know, he does the weird sidearm. You know, you make some throws and you wonder, what the heck's he doing out there? But I think we've seen enough from him now. All the injury issues are behind him. And you've seen enough from him now where you know that if you need to make, I mean, I go back to the Cowboys game. You need to make a throw in a tight window, whether it's to Calvin or you know, getting Nate Burleson back was big. I think that, to me, I'm putting my money on Stafford in a big game, in a tight game, in the fourth quarter.
I'm having trouble separating quarterbacks from offense.
And I am too.
But the simple answer for me is Matthew Stafford's the better player, right? So I trust him more.
Well, I think that's why I asked about the vacuum thing, because if I had to start a team
where is
with
this
one
vacuum
of the two
that you speak of,
it's in someone's garage collecting dust. I would go Stafford as a core quarterback.
No, but I'm talking about you can't separate Foles from the system. You could say it's all the system you want, but that's the system he's in. We're talking this year, this team, this offense. Which guy are you trusting more? That's what I'm saying.
I just can't imagine Nick Foles is going to go the rest of the year and not throw an interception. and not that Stafford won't throw an interception either. I think Foles has to come back to the mean at some point. And I just there's not enough of a sample size to, you know what you have with Matthew Stafford. He's a top eight quarterback in the NFL with a load of talent and weapons around him, and you don't know, despite the amazing run he's been on, you don't know what you have yet with Nick Foles.
Has Foles done anything like what Stafford did against the Cowboys?
No.
Right.
No, he hasn't proven.
He's made some impressive throws.
He hasn't come back and taken a team in the final minutes and put him on his back like Stafford has.
Right. People talk about him, though, like he's Alex Smith, just dinking and dunking out there.
Don't
he's
besmirch Alex Smith in front of Michael Berger.
Well, let's get to that.
We'll get to that. Actually, yeah, let's get to that now. I'm taking Stafford, by the way. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, just because Foles, he hasn't done it long enough, and I also think it's not just the offense factor. I mean, it's the fact that Stafford, I don't know, when you watch him, he can do anything on the field. And we've seen with all the rookie quarterbacks, they usually come back to the pack in the second year. I still trust Stafford more. But let's go to Alex Smith, because he's been a topic of conversation lately. Who do you trust more, Michael Berger, Alex Smith or the guy who took his job, Colin Kaepernick?
Well, this came up earlier in the newsroom, and it sounded like they were going to take away my security badge for even suggesting that I would take Alex Smith over Colin Kaepernick. But I brought some numbers. I'm not just going to talk up here like I'm just on my soapbox.
You come prepared.
Here. I come prepared. So here we go. So if you look at their numbers this season, okay, Alex Smith has the better completion percentage, more pass yards per game, more touchdowns, less interceptions. And he runs for 30 yards a game while Kaepernick runs for 31. Their rushing totals are almost exactly the same. Kaepernick does have the better passer rating. But I just think Alex Smith, in a playoff game, I want the guy. Yeah, you want the guy like Kaepernick who's dynamic and who can make plays and who can, as we saw last year against the Packers and, and as they went on their run.
Who took his team to the Super Bowl.
Exactly, yeah.
You want that in the playoffs.
Yeah, you do want that. But I have seen...
It was awesome.
I have watched. He was pretty good. But he hasn't been that guy. I think we all agree he has not been that guy this year.
Because they took those weapons away. Now they're coming back.
Well, okay, we don't know. You don't know what you have with Michael Crabtree yet. You just don't. And I think if you look at which off just the two offenses has the Niners offense been, the greatest show on turf? Have they been markedly? In fact, both teams are averaging exactly 24.8 points per game this season. So it's not like Kaepernick and the Niners are lighting the world on fire offensively. In fact, they're just kind of get their legs under them. And for a while, Kaepernick had a stretch where he couldn't complete a ball, 5 yards down the field.
Here's where I start and end with this, and it won't take long to explain. Jim Harbaugh, Greg Roman, two of the best quarterback teachers out there, spent ages watching both these guys practice. Their conclusion is the one I agree with.
Listen, long term, I mean, Kaepernick is the obvious answer. No one's going to say that if you're building a franchise, you'd rather have Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick. But I think right now in the playoffs, to get the plays made down the stretch, not make a mistake, not try to do too much. Kaepernick has been prone this year to making one read and then just running or doing something, throwing out of bounds, getting sacked. I'll take Alex Smith. He's not going to give you the big wow plays, but he will make the plays you need to get a win in the playoffs.
Let's go beyond Harbaugh and Roman, who are possibly the two best quarterback minds in the NFL. Let's throw in Andy Reid, too. So you have three of the best quarterback minds in the NFL. Game film tells us we don't trust Alex Smith's arm. We don't trust him to make plays. We're not even going to let him test his arm down the field.
What about the last couple weeks?
For the last couple weeks, and they have no wins to show for it.
They've been playing great on offense, so we can't base it on wins.
Alex Smith, 2-26 in his career when the other team scores 25 points. That tells you all you need to know about Alex Smith. He is who he is, and three of the smartest offensive coaches in the NFL know who he is, and they don't trust him to throw.
I hate wins as an argument for any quarterback, because if that's your argument, that's for Alex Smith.
Well,
I mean,
we're talking about
year,
what Matthew Stafford
okay,
does against the Cowboys, right?
Let's have some numbers. They don't trust his arm because his 6.2 yards per attempt figure is the lowest of any starter in the NFL. He has more passes, more of his attempts have come under 10 yards than any quarterback in the NFL. He doesn't trust his arm. His coaches don't trust his arm. And that's – look, if you want to win a regular season game, go with Alex Smith. If you want to win a postseason game against a good team, you're going to need a quarterback who actually does things more than hand the ball off to Jamal Charles and scamper once in a while.
It's an interesting question. Who do you trust? Because you know who Alex Smith is. I don't know who Colin Kaepernick is this year. It changes week to week. I would take
He's
Colin.
He's the same quarterback he was
I
last year.
I disagree with you, Berger. I take Kaepernick today. I take him today, tomorrow, in the playoffs, anytime, forever. But trust-wise, you're not sure what's going to show up week to week. He has been a matchup quarterback. When they have the right game plan and they dial up the right plays, he's looked great this year, and he makes five throws every week that Alex Smith
could never make.
Could dream of.
I trust that Alex Smith is going to win 10 regular season games and lose a playoff game.
Right, and he only wins those games because he's on good teams.
Kaepernick is the same quarterback he was last year. He didn't have a healthy Crabtree. Vernon Davis has been in and out of the lineup. He had Kyle Williams starting for half the year, and an injured Mario Manningham started. These guys can't separate. You can't. It's the same thing with Griffin. You can't ask these guys to do what they did last year when the surrounding parts aren't the same.
But the league's caught up with them a little bit too, because I think the scheme and Kaepernick's running ability opened up a lot of big plays last year that haven't been there this year. Maybe it's the run game. Kaepernick's been a bad runner this year, too. I think that gets lost.
He's been a bad thrower for a lot of the years. I mean, let's not listen. He's not the same guy that he was last year.
He is the same guy. He's the same quarterback.
The difference is he's not been as big a threat running. You have to admit that. He makes bad decisions. He leaves the pocket too early. He hasn't picked up a lot of first downs. There's a lot of five-yard runs on 3rd and 13 when he hasn't been pressured that much. So I think he has stepped back just a little bit. But I'd still take him over Alex Smith. Come on. All right, let's move on.
I tried. You know, what are you going to do?
Valiant attempt.
Berger's a Bengals fan, and he has stuck with them over time.
Condolences.
Listen, I mean, you got a Browns fan here, and I'm just
unlike a former Bengals fan,
right? Exactly.
Yeah, Chris Wesseling.
I like to say recovering Bengals fan.
He pretends that he's not a Bengals fan.
Don't pretend anything.
We've got a big game this weekend. In theory, it should be a big game, but it doesn't feel like one. Colts. Bengals. They both had their struggles recently. Which team do you trust more right now, the Colts or the Bengals? Let's start with the recovering Bengals fan.
It pains me to say this. The Colts are such a bad team right now that I trust the Andy Dalton-led Bengals more than the Colts.
I mean, this is if it's which team do you trust right now, it's the Bengals by a long – I mean, no one who has watched the Colts for the last month – will put any stock in what they're doing on either side of the ball, by the way. I mean, when you're down 24-3 at halftime every week, that's not 1 week fine, 2 weeks fine, 5 weeks in a row, there's something going on there, and clearly they have not been the same team. I don't want to put it all on Reggie Wayne, because I can't imagine that one player has that big an impact on what a team does offensively, but they can't run the ball. I mean, Donald Brown has been okay, but Trent Richardson has been an unmitigated disaster, I think we'd all agree. And when you can't do – they can't do – they have nobody who can win on the edge. T.Y. Hilton occasionally, but he's in the slot, and you can't put him out on the edge and have him, you know, beat guys one-on-one. Kobe Fleener has been nice, but that's, you know, kind of all they have left.
Darius Heyward-Bey is an unmitigated disaster. They can't even play him anymore. They're now playing Derek Rogers or Derek, I don't know how you pronounce it.
Derek.
Who they just signed off.
There's an apostrophe in there
LeVon
somewhere.
Brazil. They need Brazil and Rogers to step up.
That's how bad.
That's their playoff. Mark, do you disagree?
It pains me because, like, when I see a team with a quarterback like Andrew Luck and what he's done already, it's hard for me not to want to just side with that. But
I know. We're taking the Dalton team over the Luck team.
Well, it pains me on the flip side because, in no offense to the former and current Bengals fan, but Andy Dalton, to me, is one of the most uninspiring signal callers you could possibly dream up. And yet the Bengals are the team I would trust to go deeper this season.
Yeah, and I think it also – you got to go defensively here, too. I mean, the Bengals – it's amazing what they've done. No Geno Atkins, no Leon Hall.
Hasn't changed for them.
Right. I mean, I was at the Bengals-Chargers game on Sunday, and the Chargers moved the ball on everybody.
Don't you have to work on Sunday?
Listen, I pulled a few strings. but, I mean, the Chargers moved the ball on everybody. I mean, they march up and down the field. They may not always get in the end zone, but they are Phillip Rivers, and that offense moves the ball, and they could not move the ball at all on Sunday against the Bengals.
If you ask me, on the Saturday that the Bengals will play, because this is a holiday. They have to play in the Saturday game in the playoffs. And they're playing against the Colts that game, which probably can't happen.
It's not going to happen.
No, they'll be the three
well,
and the four.
In another perfect universe.
All right, in a perfect universe. If you ask
Imperfect.
Me, okay, you will lose your job if you pick this game wrong, I would say Andrew Luck will find a way to win it.
See?
Yeah.
That's, see.
Well, and this gets back to a sort of a you know, a referendum on Andy Dalton.
Well, and, who do we trust? Right. Do we trust Andy Dalton? We had a conversation earlier that the after Dalton scale that Chris Wesseling came up with,
It's absolutely genius.
If you're an answer, if you're the future for your franchise at quarterback, you're better than Andy Dalton. And anyone that's after Andy Dalton
is not an answer.
And so that's the dividing line.
He's the prime meridian of NFL quarterbacks.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I don't know after this year if the scale is going to work, because I'm getting to the point I have my answer on Andy Dalton.
But do you?
I think he's not the answer.
Here's the thing.
We know it.
Okay. He is almost, you know, two and three quarters of the way through his third season. Okay. Do you honestly feel, and the answer may be, yeah, you're crazy, that is enough time to say, you don't think that there are three guys in NFL history, two guys, who have thrown over 3,000 yards in the first two seasons, Peyton Manning and Andy Dalton, okay? Now, I know that's an inflated stat, and yardage totals don't really matter, but there, Andy Dalton, if you look at over his first, now, what is it, 43 games, whatever it is, you know, the numbers are on par with a lot of guys who didn't really blossom until their fourth, you know, Joe Flacco's of the world, people like that. The numbers are close to what
a lot of people thought that Dalton was who he was when he entered the league because he doesn't have physical gifts.
Right.
That is the difference.
But yeah, he'll tease you. He'll have months like he did in October where he literally, you know, looked like Joe Montana. And so that's the worst possible scenario for a franchise because you can't get away from it, but you also know that you're probably not going to win with this guy as your quarterback.
That's why the scale is so perfect.
Right.
But if the answer is that you're convinced he's going to stay the 20th best starting quarterback in the league, which I'm kind of convinced at this point. I mean, he was awful in September.
He was awful
in November.
He's hit his ceiling.
If you believe that, then we might have to change the scale after the season.
You've heard of a quarterback holding his offense hostage. Geno Smith is doing that right now.
Right. Andy Dalton's doing it.
Andy Dalton is holding his organization hostage.
No question.
Not the offense. Like, if you decide he's your quarterback, that's a position that you can't upgrade then. You're stuck as a mediocre
team. It's an institutional nightmare for them.
I really say give another guy a shot, too, just to be in the mix. I mean, if you threw Cam Newton or Russell Wilson or even – I'm trying to think of an – even Jay Cutler on the Bengals, I think they might
who are you going to – this is a question that comes up all the time. If you get rid of Dalton, who's going
to
be...
Well, you don't get rid of him. You just try to find another option and see what happens.
Well, let me say it from the other Ohio team. Having Dalton versus the train wreck of trying to find someone is better. But as long as they aren't committed to him long-term and being willing to draft and play other guys, because that is a talented team that it's like, wow, you cannot buy them because of the quarterback. That's really rough.
All right, let's move on to the next one. Seattle Seahawks defense or Panthers defense? We obviously trust both of these groups, but if you had to choose one.
This is the toughest one you've posed yet for me. I think, can we say if the Seahawks are playing at home?
Sure, there's no rules.
If the Seahawks are playing at home, I would take their defense over any teams.
I mean, I just
How about let's say at a neutral field?
What about on a high school field in the middle of Iowa?
Charles Johnson.
How about in
healthy?
A vacuum? In the high school field in a vacuum in Iowa.
Charles Johnson is healthy?
Yeah.
Sure.
This is a little bit tricky because we just saw the Seahawks come off a mind-boggling defensive performance.
Hey,
on Monday,
Mike Glennon, the next greatest rookie quarterback ever.
I feel like the deciding factor for me is the Seahawks have beaten better offenses than the Panthers have.
I'm going to go with the Seahawks too, and I just think the Panthers clearly are fundamentally sound at all three levels, and they have guys that can make plays in the front four and on the back end. But there are legitimate superstars on the Seahawks defense that when you need a play, you know it's going to get made from Richard Sherman. You know that, you know, somebody in that front four is going to get pressure up the middle. Cliff Averill's having a nice year quietly. You know, I just think that. I'm going with the known quantity for me right now, and we've seen it the last few years of the Seahawks. We haven't seen it from the Panthers. Obviously, they've done a great job, and they've built that. We had Charlie Cashley on the Around the League show yesterday, and he talked about how that defense was built almost exclusively through the draft. I mean, they have just brought in these guys that have fit in that system perfectly. But I think it's hard to pick against the Seahawks right now.
Well, and I would go, today I'd go Seattle, but Carolina, another defense that's built through the draft, and they've done an outstanding job bringing in talent over the last couple seasons. I don't think we've seen Carolina anywhere near its best on defense.
I'm taking Carolina for one of the same reasons that you took Seattle, is that top-tier talent. You need someone to make a play to win the game. Charles Johnson, Greg Hardy,
the Kraken,
Star,
right.
Lotulelei,
Kawan Short,
Thomas Davis.
I'm taking those guys. Luke Kuechly.
Well, Kuechly's,
I'm taking those guys
right.
over all the Seattle guys. Seattle, I think, has a lot of talent, but it's a little more about scheme. Carolina and Riverboat Ron, they're just nasty.
Is it possible that Kuechly doesn't get enough credit? I mean, he has almost single-handedly turned that defense. Yes, they've gotten a lot better in the draft, and they've obviously played well. But I mean, people who talk, you know, that when we talk about that team, and people who know that team say that he has almost single-handedly turned that defense into his own unit.
Yeah, I saw a stat a month ago that they were 26th in the NFL over the 20 previous games before drafting Kuechly, and second in the NFL after drafting him.
Right.
That's incredible.
That's incredible.
If I may pose a question for all of our tweeters out there who always want to hear fantasy.
Ooh.
If you have the Panthers defense and the Seahawks defense on your fantasy team, are you playing the matchup, or are you sticking with the Hawks, or are you sticking with the Panthers?
You got to go matchup.
I go matchup, but we'll let the Twitter followers maybe jump in and say who you would play this week. Last one quickly, Geno Smith or Matt McGloin? Who do you trust? Quick answer.
How do you not? Whoever it's Geno Smith, it could be Geno Smith and Babe Laufenberg. I'm picking
Laufenberg's got a good arm.
I'm picking like anybody not named Geno Smith at this point.
I think McLovin is the better quarterback right now, but I picked the Jets to win this game for obvious reasons.
Oh, you just don't want to eat your
I don't want to eat my softball pants, but I feel like this is not good to have Geno
Berger,
Smith.
We watch Around the League show every day. It's clear Berger never listens to the Around the League podcast. America's favorite bet and game and running gag right now is, will Chris Wesseling eat his softball pants?
Will Chris Wesseling eat his softball pants?
Chris Wesseling said before the season, if the Raiders get to 6 wins, he will eat his softball pants. They're at 4 right now. This is a big week.
This is a huge one for you.
They have to get this, because I think it's over if they don't get the win.
I was rooting for Matt Sims to start.
Wow. What did I walk into?
I'm taking McGloin. All right. Before we leave, we're going to go to another quick segment that I love to get to, because Chris Wesseling, he doesn't have a family.
Let's start
eating
there.
Softball pants and his family.
There's no kids.
You're doing well, Chris.
He's a wayward gentleman.
Little do the listeners know that I also live under a bridge
in a van down
by
the river.
He has a mild drinking problem, but what he really... What he really has is a love for
the total package
for Game Rewind and NFL Shortcuts and all the ways
he
to
does watch a lot
football
of tape, yes.
all day long. So we call this segment "What Wes is Watching," and I know you've been watching a little bit of the Patriots lately.
I have. I was really impressed. Brady made some throws against the Texans. 3 throws in particular to Gronkowski, Edelman, and Vereen, I think, that I just thought no other quarterback is making these throws. I also noticed, this is going to sound odd, but Julian Edelman is one of the most athletic players in the NFL.
Why is that odd? Isn't he like the best punt returner in NFL history
best
or something?
Best punt returner in NFL history. That diving play into the end zone. You just don't picture him as, he's a former college
quarterback.
You don't
dominate the MAC like he did and not be a phenomenal athlete?
Well, unless your name is Josh Cribbs.
Exactly.
Yeah, and he's the leading receiver on the team this year. I think that's kind of – nobody expected
making
that.
Making the leap.
Except Greg.
Candidate, Julian Edelman. We had it. We had it before the season.
So to peel back the veil, all you have to do on this show is to pitch Greg a segment that speaks positively about the Patriots, and it's like, yep, we'll tack that in. No problem.
Yeah, I was talking to Chris yesterday because I do this quarterback index each week, and every 4 or 5 weeks we do a complete rankings, 1 to 32. And it was tough to rank Brady because the first 7 or 8 weeks –
You had him low early
he
on.
He struggled.
Right.
But the last 5 weeks – I think he's been as good as
anyone. He was higher than the quarterback you just simply called Browns quarterback.
Yes, there is.
Is that like a Tech Mobile?
It basically is like we don't have the licensing rights for this team, and for a good reason.
There is no Brandon Whedon definitely anymore. There's no Hoyer. There's no Campbell. There's definitely no Alex Tanny. There is just Browns quarterback.
You know what happened 5 weeks ago? Gronk came back.
Oh, imagine that.
Yeah, and we wrote an article in the offseason that Tom Brady statistically last year was Andy Rodgers with – or Aaron Rodgers with Gronk on the field and Andy Dalton without him on the field.
I forgot to link to that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's no coincidence. I saw Bob Ryan compared. Gronkowski said that – he said that Gronkowski is better now than Tony Gonzalez was in his prime. And I can't disagree with that.
That's frightening.
Gronkowski –
he changes everything about their offense in terms of how defenses have to attack.
He is the tight ends what Dan Marino was in the 80s to quarterbacks and what Dickerson was. He rewrites what you're supposed to do in your first three or four leagues in the year – or four years in the league. He's just – like his tight end stats are incredible compared to anyone who's ever played the game. And, you know, Greg said at some point like a month ago, I think Gronk's actually more athletic this year.
I think he is. He looks different this year in terms of his speed and jumping ability and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, he couldn't solve simple math equations, but that doesn't matter because he makes plays.
Cardinals wide receiver group. Who's the best wide receiver?
How good is Michael Floyd been?
Floyd is playing better than Larry Fitzgerald.
Oh, by far.
Here's a stat that Mark will love. Over the last 3 weeks, only one receiver in the NFL has more yards than Michael Floyd, and it's Josh Gordon by 225 yards.
All gone to waste.
Nobody's even close to Josh Gordon.
I watched a fair amount of the Cardinals-Eagles game on Sunday, and I said to my brother, I said, Michael Floyd is a legitimate NFL receiver all of a sudden.
He looks quicker with the ball in his hands than I thought he would.
He's a number one receiver.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, Arians last year with Reggie Wayne in Indianapolis – did an amazing job reviving Wayne. That people didn't want Wayne.
Right.
He does an excellent job coaching receivers, and I think Floyd is the beneficiary of that.
Speaking of receivers, Alshon Jeffery had one of the best games I've ever seen by a wide receiver. Making catches over the middle, diving for balls. That touchdown that now everyone's seen. Another 80-yard touchdown where he outraced. This guy was supposed to be slow coming into the league, a fat, slow guy. He's outracing the defense. Brandon Marshall said at the beginning of the year that Alshon Jeffery will rewrite all the Bears' records, which sounded silly at the time because Brandon Marshall will have all the Bears' records. I think he's right.
I think that's
Well, then again, Marty Booker has the records right now, so it's not like
Harlan
a great
Hill.
Book.
That's a big testament to Mark Trestman. I mean, getting the ball out of the hands quickly, whether it's Cutler or McCown, Jeffery can win on the outside like that, and that's just
you're
I mean,
right. Though he had the rep as being fat and
yeah,
slow.
And slow yep. Yeah,
well, and I think we've learned this season a lot of things that this chatter that's going to bubble up around some of these prospects that just get washed down the river with negative talk. I'm not listening
Honey
to any
Badger.
Of it. Come in and play, and we'll see how we'll judge you then.
All right, before we take off, we got to mention there is a game on Thursday night.
Hold on, one last thing.
No, what do you got now?
Ryan Matthews.
Oh, I like Ryan Matthews.
Ryan Matthews.
You like Ryan Matthews?
Oh, yeah.
Out of every player in the NFL, he's the exact opposite of what his reputation was supposed to be coming into the season. He was supposed to be soft, couldn't take a hit. He runs like a battering ram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the exact opposite of what everyone thought he was going to be.
The other player, his quarterback.
Yeah.
Well, I think with Matthews, it's just that he hasn't been able to stay on the field.
Healthy,
for anyone
right.
that's ever – he's always run hard. I don't think that's changed. He's running harder maybe now and more effectively, and he's
also,
staying on the
field. They're also utilizing him a little bit differently. They're, right. they're not giving him 25 carries a game. And
everything is between the tackles.
Right.
You're right, though.
Another good offensive coach.
This isn't – they don't put people in the Pro Bowl for this, but if there was a position in the Pro Bowl for – first and second down running back.
Yeah.
I think Ryan Matthews would be one of the top two or three running backs.
Is there a third down in the Pro Bowl? I'm not sure I've ever seen that.
Just well, the new format this year. I don't know what's going on.
All right. As I mentioned, there is a Thursday night football game this week. Houston Texans, Jacksonville Jaguars, NFL Network. Be there. We forked these teams, I believe, early September. It was a while ago that we forked these teams. So they've been done a while. I think the only question really in this game is whether we think Chris's boy, Case Keenum, has any chance to be the quarterback there and whether Houston is going to take a quarterback next year.
Well, he's my boy. I still have faith in him, but I don't expect the Texans to go into next year with him as the starter because I think there'll be a new coach. And why would the new coach keep a guy who was a system fit for Kubiak and isn't known to have great physical tools?
Oh, and by the way, if Jacksonville pulls this one off, they've won 4 of 5.
And the Texans probably get the number one pick, in which case they will take a quarterback.
Remember how close it was when the Texans won those first two games that they easily could have. They could easily be 0-12 right now. By the way,
yeah,
they could have like 6 wins though too.
That's
remember
true.
They were up 20-3 on
right.
the Seahawks.
I think
Seahawks.
Their spirit was broken along the way.
I've heard people make the case that maybe Kubiak won't be fired.
I don't see that.
That's insane.
Well, you have to sell him and everything else to
no
your
team,
fan base.
No team has packed it in more than this team.
What about Rick Smith? Rick Smith keep his job?
I think so. I think he's drafted pretty well.
He only has hired one head coach. They came in together,
right.
And he did pretty good. You know, he's done
pretty
well.
He's not the issue. But Kubiak, gotta go.
And if Kubiak's gone, then Keenum is essentially a non-factor, just, you know, battling for snaps. Doesn't mean he's totally out of the mix, but they're not going to count on him.
I'm not quite as fond of him as I was a month ago. I think he's a great backup. He can get by. He's like a Ryan Fitzpatrick. You can get by with him for three or four games.
He could be better than that.
I was going to say, he's got more upside than Ryan Fitzpatrick.
He's not a guy you're going to bring in the next year when he's shown that he can't really play well.
He was like a good-looking girl at school that, like, you were way into, and then, like, 2 months later, you're like, I've moved on.
Could that be Nick Foles in a couple months?
This is the problem I have. This is the problem I have with women. They can't read a blitz.
They just don't understand the magic of Wes quite yet.
Crystal's ears were perking up. They're ready to just go nuts. But I think she was satisfied with that one.
Yeah.
We should go out on that.
I'm laughing, and I think that's our exit.
Yes. Friday we will be back previewing all the games. Dan Hansis will be back in the chair, and we can't wait for him to be back. We're also gonna potentially fork a team. We decided to push that off until Friday
for a special reason.
Yes, I think we'll be talking about, you know, Dan's team potentially. We don't know that for sure.
We gotta let Dan weigh in.
The committee has not yet met, so we'll talk about that on Friday. We'll pick all the games. It's been a pleasure, Michael Berger,
to have you.
Thank you.
It's been the pleasure's all on this end of the table, and I hope maybe we can do this again sometime.
Yeah, please watch Around the League on NFL Network. I hope you're listening to me. Bosses out there.
Me too, by the way. Bosses out there.
It's on. It's great. That's it for today's show. Please download. Tell your friends to subscribe. Give us good comments. I'm just going to shill. Dan doesn't do enough. Let's just shill.
If the download rate, you know, there's a huge spike. I think we all know that that was no accident, by the way.
It's the burger effect. It's the burger bomb. For Michael Berger and Mark Sessler, Chris Wesseling, K Rich behind the glass, Dan Hansis in absentia, and Lyle, that piece of till Friday.
I wouldn't want to be Mrs. Ryan after that game. Or ever.
She must be a saint. No pun intended.
Welcome back to another edition of the NFL. Wait, what is it?
Welcome back to the Around the League. Off to a flying start. Don't get any ideas, Crystal.